facility at the airport, including a 120-man transient camp, the corporation is requiring several things, such as no personally owned vehicles of any kind by any transients, no firearms of any kind by any transients or in the camp, mandatory orientation on culture, wildlife, and habitat, no leaving the camp even without a native guide. Majority local hire where qualified or qualifiable individuals are available. The corporation sponsored a youth essay contest on culturally relevant issues, as well as an arts and crafts contest and a youth leadership week. The corporation tries to use cultural mechanisms of group competition rather than individual competition in its operations. Decisions at the management level uses extensively the traditional Elliott methodology of decision making, which is consensus and conflict avoidance. In planning the port commercial development, the corporation is working with the city and the IRA to develop plans on development control, local hire, training, and other such important concerns, with a specific goal that all three share of minimizing negative development impacts and maximizing local participation with maximum control of culture and lifestyle. In summation, none of these things would have been possible without the corporate model established under ANCSA and or the seed capital and land control it provided us. These accomplishments were fraught with problems and challenges common to many village corporations throughout the state. Like all village corporations, a lot of time, energy, and money went towards running the maze of federal and state regulations and implementation of ANCSA in such areas as land selections, negotiation of 14C rights, easements, rights of ways, conflicting land claims and rights, obtaining patents, and interim conveyances. Like all village corporations, particularly during the formative stages, a great deal of money went towards paying legal fees necessary to implement ANCSA requirements and defining its very ambiguous provisions. Like all village corporations, we face a widespread negative image in the outside business world towards native corporations. That is, of being viewed as politically volatile, unstable in management, and having business naivete and ignorance. It is this view by the traditionally very conservative business institutions of the United States, albeit, I have to say, justified, that makes it difficult, if not impossible, for most village corporations to leverage what little capital they have or to have reputable and successful business partners. Lack of financing or of good business partners often result in village corporations going totally on their own or getting into bed with scheming business partners. Either way, the odds of profitability are quite slim and losses and bad mistakes are highly likely. I would assume you found this in the majority of village corporations, that they are either doing nothing or failing badly. Litigation of ANCSA issues has been phenomenal, phenomenally costly, phenomenally time-consuming. Section 7I of ANCSA placed regional corporation against regional corporation. Ambiguities of Section 14J regarding how regional corporation may develop subsurface resources within village boundaries will set village against region and vice versa. Many villages and regions have been in court with the federal government on questions of appropriate easements, rights of ways, definition of navigable waters, airport and federal installation boundaries, question of legal jurisdiction. Derivative stockholder lawsuits are becoming more frequent. In most cases, most ANCSA corporations have had no major positive effect on their shareholders. This is not surprising considering the host of obstacles in their path. Little seed capital, lack of local business opportunities, lack of infrastructure adequate for business development in the community, lack of human resources trained and or experienced in the business arena, the leadership spread too thin by the numerous demands placed on them from inside the village and out, political pressures to invest in something despite odds of succeeding or risk, the biases of the business community, internal and external conflicts brought about by ANCSA ambiguities, and unrealistic shareholder expectations. We have faced these same problems. It does not bode well for continued protection of corporate assets. especially the land, which is the basis of cultural survival in Village, Alaska. Personally, I'm not an advocate of Native sovereignty as it is presently being structured by UTA, nor do I believe that Village Corporation should or can protect culturally valuable lands or serve as a protectorate of the culture. Cultural enhancement and assistance in cultural protection, yes, but cultural protection itself, it's the wrong vehicle, even if Village Corporations are financially successful. And it is an extremely dangerous situation when they are not. If we are sincere about our desire to protect our cultures, it would be a precipitous proposition to look to any single vehicle as a panacea or to involve individual ambitions and desires in the efforts to seek solutions. And there are solutions. Taking up the issue of sovereignty first, like everything else, there are strengths and weaknesses, problems and solutions, advantages and disadvantages. I'll try not to oversimplify the complexities of sovereignty, but a few things must be understood and openly admitted. I believe it is necessary for us to interact with the outside business world in order to create economic development, particularly where a village has few natural or financial advantages to begin with. Outside capital and expertise is needed for any major successful economic enterprise. Self-sufficiency and self-determination is not possible if it depends on the political whims and desires of government goodwill and appropriation of funds. Most social welfare-type programs have had little positive impact on economic development, and such money always carries with it uncertainty of future funding and guaranteed government control. In my visits to Lower 48 reservations, and I've been to over 30 of them, I have seen the effects of limited sovereignty. Most reservations are sad stories of abject poverty, high suicide rates, and extensive alcoholism, even on these reservations with good natural resources. Why, I asked. How could this be? Why isn't there economic and community development? Well, the answers are complex but straightforward. They have the same problems village corporations are facing and then some. As limited sovereigns, land is ultimately controlled by government bureaucrats, most of whom are well-intentioned but strapped by mountains of government red tape, and most are not businessmen anyway. As limited sovereigns, the tribes cannot be sued unless they establish IRAs, and even then the ability to be sued is very cloudy, or unless the sovereign agrees to be sued. American business institutions' modus operandi are contracts governed by known law. The ultimate remedies for breach of contracts is litigation with well-understood rules. Such laws protect the businessmen and their investments. They are not experts on sovereignty, but they know that contract enforcement on reservations is subject to the whims of the limited sovereign, which goes by rules few people understand, even the limited sovereign. No business, conservative by nature, have to invest on reservations, nor do they want to where the rules are unclear or where so few legal precedents are set. IRAs have some strengths that traditional bodies do not have, but also some of the same weaknesses. At least with IRAs, one can establish businesses where the IRA can sue and be sued. But it is unclear, for example, what the mechanisms are that would allow them to be sued. It can be clouded by such things as, was the business contract approved properly by the council and the Secretary of Interior? Can a new secretary withdraw approval previously granted? What is the court of jurisdiction? Does the transaction have to be approved by tribal members? What percentage are tribal members? Many of the rules governing IRAs are undefined and sometimes dependent on the whims of the council at the time. And I would like to submit a newspaper article to the commission done by the Washington Post on the conditions on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, because I believe it's typical and on point about what happens when rules are undefined or arbitrary, how businesses reacted, and the net results of sovereignty when it was not well thought out. And it's a dramatic portrayal of absolute failure of every single democratic institution that could possibly be established. On the strength side of this issue, limited sovereignty can serve as one vehicle for cultural protection where loss of control over culturally valuable lands are concerned, but under several conditions. A, the rules and regulations governing protection of such lands be very well developed and understood, especially by the tribal membership, and that the lands be protected, or to be protected, be placed in well-defined, thoroughly understood, legally defensible shelters. B, government control over protected lands be eliminated, but not necessarily government oversight, when demanded on a case-by-case basis by a majority of the tribal populace. C, that the recipient tribal entity not have any discretion on use of such lands and that such use be strictly defined to protect subsistence resources, habitat, and traditional uses. D, that no lands of economic development value be transferred to these tribal entities unless the tribal populace decides otherwise, and only if they understand thoroughly what the effects of such decisions are, pro and con, and only if the ambiguous rules of legal recourse are cleared up to the satisfaction of the business world. This would mean taking certain tribal assets or making certain tribal assets vulnerable to taxation, bankruptcy, awards of damages against tribes for breach of contracts and the like, or in other words, be a corporation under federal and state laws with no stockholders. Before even getting to this point, however, all communities would need government recognition of villages, limited sovereigns. I'm sure there's been extensive discussion on that. The likelihood of this, for now at least, is slim to nil given the mood of the state, Congress, and the Reagan administration, but it does not mean it's impossible. Village corporations, on the other hand, are vulnerable to loss of land and are loss of control of land by corporate takeover, bankruptcy, and or taxation. I believe that a corporate structure under state law is a necessary element to attract outside development, but it is the wrong vehicle for protection of culturally valuable lands because of their vulnerabilities and their profit-centered mandate. Village corporations must divest themselves of carefully identified culturally valuable lands and hold onto lands suitable for economic development unless the shareholders decide otherwise. It is incumbent upon all village corporations to work towards developing the right kind of protective vehicles for culturally valuable lands, along with all the other people and organizations who have the same goal, and to control the nature of development on the other lands, not for profit as an end, but profit as a means to the end of cultural and economic enhancement. To the extent the village corporation is failing, it must merge with other village corporations or the region, provided that if it is with the region, control in certain areas is maintained within the village. It must attract reputable and successful partners to manage investments, get competent management, or in any other legal and reasonable way ensure that it gets back on the road to financial health. All village corporations, of course, must develop strategies against loss of control generally, and there are numerous potential solutions. But if village corporations have any chance at all to survive, business realities must be learned, understood and accepted, and educated risks must be taken. I believe that rejection of the corporate vehicles will be a grave mistake if the village is going to accommodate their perceived and real economic needs. We can't have our cake and eat it too. An absolutely closed system cannot work today, and absolute control as a goal will destroy us. In summary, corporations are necessary and they can succeed while serving many cultural, social, and economic needs of the community. There are problems, but they can be overcome under the existing structures and systems. Village corporations must take realistic assessment of their weaknesses organizationally and financially, work at curing these weaknesses and capitalizing on their strengths. They must take risks, leverage their assets, recruit competent management, maximize the value of the commercial land, eliminate personal egos and purely political concerns from the decision-making process. The sovereignty movement is good in that it forces everyone to question the directions we are going. This movement can do good if it does not play politically on the real fears of our people in order for it to achieve power. They must work with the village corporations to common goals and not be tunnel visioned by presuming they are the answer to everyone's prayers or that cities and village corporations must dissolve and transfer all their powers and assets to them. And above all, we must not dwell on the trials and tribulations of the past and look for someone to blame. It is useless to our survival and non-productive. We must assume direct responsibility for what we have done and for what we are about to do and not find scapegoats like the federal government, regional corporations, or whoever. In my participation and work with Indian tribes in the lower 48, I have found very sadly that much of their efforts went towards complaining to the federal government about the sad state of affairs and spent most of their time seeking out government programs. An Elliott story comes to mind at this point. There was a 200-year-old man named Kuyuch. Kuyuch lived in a band which became a village, which became a city. Before, his leaders were elders in the councils, and now they are IRA presidents, city mayors, and corporate presidents. Before, land was used for communal benefit owned by no one, and now it is in lots and blocks owned by individuals. Before, his home was made of the free earth with energy from the earth, and now he must make money to keep the house habitable and apply under some law or with some expense for land to build a home. Before, all his food came from hunting, fishing, and gathering, and now some or most of it comes in wrappers filled with chemicals which he must buy. A little boy asked Kuyuch what he must do to control his future. And Kuyuch replied, "This world is not of our people's making, but it is not too late. White man's words have as many meanings as there are seals in the world's oceans. Study it and choose the road you wish to take, or it will never be of your own making. Do not reject the other worlds. Take the best from it and mold it into yours. And above all, do not follow your mind. Let your mind follow your heart. Your heart contains your people's spirit and courage of generations. Your mind is what you learn today. Do not give up, for with every problem there is a solution." This is the philosophy of our corporation. Our people will do what is right and what is necessary. We are molding outside business requirements with valued cultural philosophies, and it is starting to work, so it is possible. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mikuliev. Would you leave us a copy of that? Thank you very much. Just before you leave your chair there, I think I should say that Mr. Mikuliev's presentation is one of the most thoughtful and complete that it's been my pleasure to listen to during the year that I've been traveling around the state, and I really do appreciate it. It's I will make this clipping from the Washington Post part of the record of the commission, and I read this myself a couple of months ago, and it is a sad, sad, sad story. Well, who's next? Yes, sir. Maybe, if you don't mind, Joyce could just bring over that portable mic and we could get your name, and just for the record.
Thank you, my friend. Jerry. He got this AF meeting last month ago, and he had a complication about these natives. And there was also Eskimo Elliots and because everybody was all involved in it, you know. And, I was just wondering, you know, I hope we're not involved into the problem, you know, so stop our bylaws too, you know. Because it seemed like half the time they didn't make no agreement to their own thing. You know, I was just wondering, you know, if we're involved in it too, you know. I hope not, you know. We're a small tribe and they got a bigger tribe than we have. I hope that we're not fighting for them, you know. We're fighting for ourselves. Like, we all fight for our own rights, you know, but everybody got their thing, same thing, you know.
Well, I gather they had...
I noticed that, you know, when the AFN, when they had that thing, you know, they had their own, they were only doing for their own thing, not for anybody else.
Well, I wasn't in Anchorage during the AFN convention, but everybody tells me they had a...
I was watching it, though.
Everybody tells me they had a good, lively debate, and maybe that's a good thing, to...
Yeah, but then, you know, then they had that problem where they came into the... coming to Congress, you know, I feel like, you know, the Congress not going to pass half those things, you know, due to what they couldn't make up their mind, you know.
Well, it seems to me that Alaska Natives have to decide for themselves what they think should be done.
They have their own tribal laws too, you know.
Yeah.
So just thinking, you know, that we're not Eskimos or Clinkets or anything like that, we're Aleuts, you know. You know, I've seen them, and they're fighting their own, like they're fighting their own battle. We're fighting ours too, you know. You know, it seems like, you know, we might be a small tribe, but you know, then we've got all the rights in the world to, you know. We're middle of Bering Sea. That don't make, you know, like, you know, everybody can have the whole world to itself or something. Well, it didn't seem right the way I saw that in the thing last time. Yeah, it was wrong, you know. Everybody's speaking for themselves, like they're speaking for their own community or something, or their own people or something. But I didn't see anybody standing up for it. And I was just hoping, you know, the people in my alley, the people up here, the alley's got all the rights in the world, you know. And, all I can say is that, you know, I don't blame them for trying, you know, even if we're a very small tribe, you know. They tried their best, and I hope the best for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
That convention was wrong. It was wrong. The natives were fighting against each other, you know. Like they were putting us down, you know, like they were putting us, rip was getting higher than us, but it was wrong. The wrong way to fight it. I seen it, I watched it. Mm-hmm. Everybody would all do is arguing.
Well, I wasn't there and I didn't watch it either, so I'm I have to...
You seen it, you know, I didn't see Zali crying over something like that, you know. You don't do things like that. Fight for their right, they live up to their older people, they live in the Belion, they belong to the old. Older people, and they believe in their rights. When I saw the convention, I couldn't believe it, you know. All the natives are fighting against each other. And they have after another meeting, and what? What was it? February, March, March 15, before they can make up their minds what they can do, you know. They stop everything right there. Right in the track. They could have set it all up in that one convention meeting. Instead, now they have to have another meeting. That's what's stopping everything. And the whole conversation right here is the same. Now they have to have another one in what, February, March 15th? April 15th? Another convention?
I think it's in March.
Yeah, it's got to be March 15th. Yeah, but why waste your time, you know? Why don't they figure it out for their own self, you know? Let them do our thinking. But I think that's what's happening, you know? That's what's getting involved with them too, you know? And to their profit, and their thing, you know? And we're getting involved inside of it too. What we want to do is get outside of it, you know? Think for our own selves.
Okay, thanks. Yes, Father.
Good evening, everybody. I'm sorry I don't organize the names of the people yet, and of course, I would like to say good evening to everybody. My name is Reverend Father Michael Leschenkoff. I'm born in St. George, raised over there for my 50 years of a life at St. George and 21 years here, St. Paul. I'm a native, Aleut. My mother was born at St. Paul. My father, born at Atco. And I was born at St. George. And as far as I know, I occupy both St. George and St. Paul because my mother born here and I born at St. George, so I step on both islands, St. Paul and St. George. As far as the money goes and share goes, I think it could be very interesting to speak about the control of the people for the time to come, 1991. It's still about 7 or 6 years yet till we will all see with our friends, Eskimos, Tlingits, all Alaska Natives, which will be speaking at that time. And there will be a lot of changes will come up within 6 or 7 years. To those who are going to speak up are still children, teenagers yet. So we should concern about those things also. Elders and youngers, both together. Control of the people by work with the elders and work with the youngsters. Then we will be all matched when the time comes. As far as I can say, long before city corporation, with other things started, there was only one. It's called community. When I become a priest to work with the people and for the people. Back from 1957, I was ordained as a reader by Metropolitan Leonti. 1959, I was ordained as deacon. 1963, I become a priest when I retire from government. And as far as I see, we should all work together as one, natives of Alaska. And contacting each other pretty closely. So we wouldn't be all individuals. If one loses in a one part, he will become follower to the other individuals who are in different areas, if we're not start to get together as one. That's the most control. In a lot of ways of my living in 71 years, I've seen all different kind of ways in changing from one organization to other organization. Increase of population, different scattered people. After the Second World War, there are all different kind of people working together now, all have different ways, different minds. I do not say it spoils the friendship, but try to make up the friendship as much as they can. But still, there are some between the people as hatred. And not trying to work together as a one. For some reason, there's always temptation comes around. And so as if the people doesn't work as a native and join natives, something will come up for our future, which will affect more than the money will buy, the way of life. It is not easy to live up to this time without good education, which is needed now. How we didn't have it was government control of privilege of violence here. We were not allowed it as to be educated. And left us uneducated, the government. But we are educated in our language, as an Aleut. We have a brains, but nobody understands it. That's the problem. If it wasn't for that language, I probably wouldn't live as a priest. I become a priest by it, by my language. And I'm still use it as for my life. But at least we might not be as highly educated as some people, but from outside. But at least we talk English. I've seen several people come through Alaska. Maybe some will be in Alaska for 20 years or more, but never did catch any native language of Eskimo, Tlingit, or Aleut, which I can't understand. There are a lot of native people in Alaska are not educated, but they can speak English enough to make the other people understand and help them. Why can't the people outside can do it to us as a native? Why can't they learn our language? Why can't they speak it if we speak their language? That would make us much more easier to work with them. And we're in a tight spot now at this time with the lack of that, because there will be a lot of them come through here who will speak to us in the way we don't understand. So I hope the more younger people of natives, the Eskimos, Tlingits, and the Aleuts, will work together and bring up the education fast. In 6 years, of course, we could develop it up to as anybody can bring it up. But as being an elder of a native, I think one way of control for all the elders of Alaska, native, if they can say two words to lose or not to lose, to keep the word, at least to know how to say yes or no. Those two words could control the people. I'm here for 20 years in St. Paul. If I didn't work right with the people, I wouldn't make it in 20 years. From the people, my extending of 20 years here is mostly by them. Believe them. Want to help them. Want to work with them. And believing as they are my native people. And here's the control also. Of course, we are most been raised under Russian Orthodox Church as the first religion which we learn by Father Veniaminov when you start spread Orthodoxy in Aleutian area. And with that, as I use, it works in my 20 years here with the people, the control, as I seen it. And I hope and wish for the future to come, as I'm planning to retire one of these days. Somebody will use it to work with the people. As what I trust and seen, it works. If it ever changed, that's where the people will be lost. People with a purple love should see, or my natives of Alaska should believe in their religion. If they want all to hold as claim holders and work with the people who try to control it also in the way of their education. I can prove when I got here, following me, Assembly of God come. And as far as I'm here, it's still empty. And that means, which I would like to see, the control of the people, which we all should look at as a native of Alaska. May I say to the brothers, my brother natives of Alaska, whoever they are, where they are, wherever they are, but we never met. But let's all, as being one, under the name of the Lord, with Him, we'll be all together, and will our children will have what we wish, what we want to have for our future to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Father. Thank you very much.
Father George Pletnikoff, I'm a stockholder of Tunnagusa Corporation. I haven't been following too closely the issues that are confronting us in this time. I'm not well versed with the whole issue of 1991 and our land problems. Some of what I've heard tonight, I can only reflect in my own mind by thinking that these issues and Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act have caused a lot of anxiety and unrest in our lives. I've worked in it since it was passed in the Alley Corporation, and I've seen the change that it's brought to our people in the Aleutians and on the Pribilof Islands. It's kind of the lesser of the two evils, whether we can receive land or not. My primary goal and concern about the Claims Act was the preservation of the title of the land. And I begin to see the ownership of that land slip away very quickly, not only by outside influences, but also by our village corporations. I am very pleased at what Taniguza Corporation has done in trying to preserve our culture and social lifestyles here on the Pribilofs. But I'm afraid that many of our village corporations in our region and throughout the state are going to find those kinds of issues in the next 5 years difficult to try to develop. I'm sure that you have heard about Gustavo and his work with liberation theology. And coming from the church, a lot of his thoughts and his writings that I've read, I would try to somehow apply to our condition. I know from working in the church on the national and once or twice on the international level that even our church looks at the Alaska Native people as a third world nation. In that capacity, I think that we have a lot of ways to control the direction of our people. Sovereignty issues are very scary, very difficult to try to handle, as Larry very well put out. The issues of taxation of the land, the issue of the selling of the stocks, the issues of children who are born after 1971. My children are not even considered Aleut people any longer, and I'm only 34 years old, according to the federal government, that's my understanding. They're not enrolled to anywhere, if maybe sitting around until I die until they become Aleuts. So my basic concern and my basic worries are you know, the sale of the stocks. I don't know how we can prevent that or how we can slow that down. It looks like we're caught between a hard spot and a rock. And the losing of our land. The church often takes a very close look and a very, I think, a realistic approach to what God gives us in this life, which is primarily our land. If without that, we essentially don't have anything else. In the Old Testament, there are many discussions about the land issue from the prophets to the people. Going on into the New Testament, there are many discussions by Christ and the apostles about land to the people. And I think for us, in inheriting the Orthodox Church's teachings, we also have that approach. I don't think that was foreign to our people prior to them being baptized into Christianity, that the land is the source of our life. So that's, you know, again, I know the issues are very hard, they're very difficult, the questions are very keen as to what to do with our future, and I'm just hoping that with your input and your report that you give to the ICC that you can somehow influence some of the directions that the state and the federal government will be trying to deal with us in the years to come as far as what our lives are going to be following the 1991 issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Father.